So for attendance, we have Chair Jennifer Campbell, Alder John Uguer, Alder Dina Nina Martinez Rutherford. Alder Conklin is excused. Angela Jones is here. Tiffany Malone is here. Megan Miller is here. And Matt Fair is here. Chair, the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you, Ben. We have the roll. So the next item is approval of minutes from our December 5th, 2024 meeting. May I have some hands going up? Matt Fair with a motion. I take Angie with a second. You guys were quick on that one. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, we will consider those approved. Moving on, public comments. Anything? Oh, Maria.
Just coming in to say we do not have public comment
Oh, great.
at this time, but we will for item two, just and three for answering questions.
Fantastic. Thanks. And the committee might know or might not know that with Lynette doing double duty, Maria and John are going to be helping us more. So that's exciting. We'll get to see more of them. Next up, disclosures and recusals. Anybody? Oh, Alder Uguer.
Yes, with regard to item number two, Legistar 86356, I guess it is. My consulting company has done some minor projects with Hope Community Capital Corporation, and the principal, Carrie Sanders, is a personal friend, but it will not affect my decision on this matter. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I think that's fine. And staff, feel free to correct me if I'm the personal friend, I'm not concerned at all about, but the business relationship, somebody tell me if that's an issue. And in the meantime, Angie, as usual, let's hear it.
So, I think this is okay, but I just want to make sure that it is noted just in case anybody requests, a copy of the video or anything. The Urban League, in terms of funding for United Way where I work, they are within my portfolio, so they are one of the programs that I fund. We are not, however, investing in the Black Business Hub, but did just want to make that comment just so that, people knew of the investment relationship that I have with Urban League.
Great. And speaking of, I should disclose as WEDC, we are an anchor tenant in the Black Business Hub. So we have a relationship there, but we have no relationship with the commercial kitchen. So I also think that that's okay. The staff is scurrying to say, what are all these people up to in their spare time? We will have those for the minutes. Thank you. And then first up for new business, item number two, $4 million. That's cool. Let's get a motion on the table. Alder Dina Nina, seconded by Matt Fair. Please, staff, let's talk about this item.
Awesome. Well, Happy New Year, everybody. Great to see you all. So, our first decision item, we're recommending award of up to of just a little over $4 million of home ARP funds. So, just a little background on this program. So, through ARPA, the city received a special allocation of home funds called Home ARP, and they're were some very specific requirements in how these funds could be used. Most paramount were that they had to serve a qualifying population, which was defined by HUD, pretty much encompasses folks who are experiencing homelessness or at risk of homelessness or escaping domestic violence and other unsafe situations like that. Originally we had a set aside in the tax credit RFP 2 years ago, seeking projects that wanted to convert a motel or other suitable commercial property. We didn't get any takers in that round. We then put these funds in our non-tax credit RFP that occurred in 2023, and we received one response from Housing Initiatives. And they are proposing a 16-unit supportive housing development on Roth Street. In their request, they're seeking a little over $3 million for capital expenses and $1.1 million for supportive services. So we are recommending approval. I'd be happy to answer any other questions. And Brad from Housing Initiatives is here and is happy to answer any questions as well.
Great. Thanks, John. Questions from the committee? Have just curious, does 4 million seem like a lot for 16 units?
So the beauty of these home ARP funds is because they are supposed to be used to serve a very vulnerable population, and knowing that there was not a rental subsidy attached to it, so we could buy down the entire cost of construction, and so that's why the amount is so high compared to what you normally see.
Okay, thanks. Any other, Alder Uguer?
Yes, so this would be a question for Brad. I notice in the financial projections that we've got the use of ARPA funds over 5 years for operating expenses. This is long-term affordable housing for this particular purpose. I'm just curious as to whether there are any plans for carrying on beyond that 5-year usage of funds from this
It's an
from ARPA.
excellent question. Thanks for that. Yes, there are. My intention is to carry it beyond that. Recall that this is actually fitting into an existing program that's actually larger. We've got a number of staff that have been employed for quite a few years. This is essentially an expansion of an existing program. 5 years is already a pretty long way out to say we've got funding secured for 5 years. My intention is to keep staffing and services at that level. 5 years. With that timeline, we can plan, we can build on the success of the program, we can seek alternate funding. If this was just funding for a year or two, I would be much more skeptical of it. But we can definitely build infrastructure in the background with a 5-year timeline. And again, we've got an existing case management program that does not rely on these funds at all for FTE positions, as well as an expansion that took place last year, over $300,000 a year, bringing on a couple more staff. So this will be a very robust staffing situation that'll be really well situated to serve a highly vulnerable population.
Thank you, Brent. That's helpful.
Other questions, comments from the committee? Seeing none. Thanks, Brad, for being here. We have a motion and a second on the table. We've discussed. We will do a vote by unanimous consent. Seeing no objections or objectors, we will consider it passed. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Next up, we have the commercial kitchen for Urban League.
Me again.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Hold
Oh,
on. Too fast. First, we need a motion on the table.
you're right.
Thank you, Alder Dean and Nina, second by Megan Miller. Now, please, John.
So excited to talk. I just, have to get in there. The Urban League of Greater Madison applied through our Community Facilities Loan Program. So a little just refresher on what that program is. We have about the last 3 years, we've had a budget of $1 million. It is to support our nonprofit partners in the community with facility improvements, or purchasing a facility, or leasing space in a commercial space. They applied under our program to build out a shared commercial kitchen facility at the Black Business Hub. The goal of their program is to support emerging micro businesses. I learned that renting a space from a commercial kitchen is very expensive, and so one of the big things about their program is that they will have very affordable rents for emerging businesses. We're recommending support, and I believe we have Ed here from the Urban League, who
Yep, looks like
has
it.
registered that they would be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Questions from the committee? Alder Dean and Nina.
I probably am missing it, but Ed, what are the rates that you're planning on running for these for space?
Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Sorry. Okay, great. Thanks. So they'll be probably There'll be three or four different categories of users of the space. So we've got two businesses, one that will be an emerging coffee shop and one that will be an emerging a wine and cupcake lounge owned by a new startup. And they will have access to the space, and it's just built into their below market rent for the storefronts that they're leasing from us. And then we have been doing a variety of like pop-up events in the building for micro vendors, and I think they will have access to use the space. Right now we are estimating modeling that at $15 an hour for usage. And then also adjacent to that kitchen, we will have three vending counters that emerging food entrepreneurs will be able to rent. And we're still kind of working out some of the details of that. I think they'll just pay a fee for the counter space, and then they'll get use of the kitchen as part of that.
Wonderful. That's incredibly reasonable. And as somebody who came from that space, I love to see it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alder. Any other questions or comments for Ed or for staff? Seeing none, unanimous consent. Once again, we have the motion and the seconds. I see no fits of objection, so we will consider it approved. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you all.
Congratulations.
Appreciate it. Good to
Have a
see
good
everybody.
night.
Take care.
Okay. Next up, item number four. Somebody's going to scold us about completing our statements of economic interest. Who would like to take that honor?
I'd be happy to. This is just a reminder that to complete the statement of interest, you should have received an email. And that's simple as that, I think.
Okay, great. Consider us warned. Next up, we're going to talk about our eviction defense and diversion program closing down. Is that also you, John?
Oh, I saw a question. I just
Oh, did I miss one? Oh, Megan, sorry.
Just real quick, if we have not completed it, have we gotten an email reminding us? I'm pretty sure I did.
Good question. I know for staff it was due by the 7th, which has already passed.
Yes, we got an email reminding us.
Oh, you did?
Okay. Thank you.
Well, you know, that's the way it goes. Okay, any other questions? Statement of economic interest? Great. John, back to you, I think.
This will be Matt for the next
Oh,
one.
Matt.
Thanks, y'all. And I do have a presentation, so just a second while I share my screen here. Okay, perfect. So I am here to talk to y'all tonight about the closure of the Eviction Diversion and Defense program. The partnership, which is something that we've talked about at this committee before, has been a part of larger discussions. Before we do that, though, I do just want to give a brief sort of overview of emergency rental assistance more generally and where these funds came from, and the different programs that were set up utilizing it. So first of all, the emergency rental assistance programs that we've had here at the City of Madison are funded through two acts of federal legislation and directly in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. So the first was the Consolidated Appropriations Act. Those funds that were made available for ERA through that were known as ERA 1 and had a sunset date. Last date funds could be used of December 29th, 2022. The second tranche of funds through legislation that was made available was through the American Rescue Plan Act, was enacted later in 2021. Those are known as ERA 2, and those have a sunset date. Last day funds can be used as September 30th of 2025. So It's been 5 years, 4 years now since all of this happened, since the pandemic started. And just thinking back to it, when we as a city first got access to those funds as an entitlement grantee directly from the US Department of Treasury and then subsequent reallocations through the state of Wisconsin, we really wanted to make sure that those funds could be utilized as quickly as possible to help support folks who were sheltering in place. Had limited employment opportunities or reduced hours at their employment to make sure that they could stay in safe and stable housing. So the first portion of that program was called Dane Core, and it was operated as a partnership between the city, the county, and Tenant Resource Center from February to September of 2021. So this was with ERA 1 funds, started before the American Rescue Plan Act, was even enacted by Congress. Over those 7-ish months, the Tenant Resource Center served just over 2,700 households and put out nearly $7 million in direct financial assistance to ensure that folks could stay in their housing during those initial stages of the pandemic. Now, while that was happening over the summer, there was a lot of the initial pandemic response was crisis response. We need to make sure these resources can get to folks who need them, make sure they can stay in their homes. And over that summer of 2021, there was a lot of conversation among staff, among TRC, among other community partners about how we could potentially expand that program, make sure that we were getting resources to everyone that we possibly could, and then unify resources to make them simpler for tenants and renter households to use and access. So, because of that, you see this program stopped at September 12, 2021. We developed the Dane Core 2.0 program. So this program had a couple of extra components to it. The city RFP'd out for partners and selected a couple of partners for in-person application support to actually meet with tenants in person to submit applications online, make sure that they're available all over the community, in various neighborhoods all across the city. Those folks were Nehemiah and Foster of Dane County, Meadowood Health Partnership and Meadowood Neighborhood Association, and then the African Center for Community Development. We also selected a vendor for general rental assistance application support. So that's when tenants do submit their application online, did submit their application online, to process those, make sure that all of the documentation that was needed was valid, and then write checks to landlords to ensure that tenants could stay in their housing. That was the Community Action Coalition for South Central Wisconsin. And then finally, we did select as well the Tenant Resource Center to operate something called the Eviction Diversion and Defense Partnership. So this again was a joint effort between the city and the county, utilizing their federal funds that they were entitled to as well. Dane County connected with Urban Triage to focus on folks outside of the city of Madison. The big component of this was utilizing a shared system where no matter where you lived, no matter where you moved to, whether it was inside the city or out, who the provider was that was helping to serve you, it was all the same to the tenants and the renter households who were applying for funding. So same platform, same application, same process. So this program launched after a brief pause in rental assistance in October of 2021. So just to talk about some of the outcomes of that, because this was a fairly substantial program, Community Action Coalition served nearly 6,500 renter households in the city of Madison, which is roughly one out of every 10 renter households that live in the city. So a huge number of folks, about 10% of renters in the city utilizing this program at some point, and they dispersed almost $40 million in financial assistance to households. The vast majority of that was in rental assistance, and then the average months that a household utilized the program was for 6.8, just over 6.5 months. Again, there was a lot of economic instability, wanting to make sure that folks who had access to it could access it. The last component of that, then, when I said we also contracted with TRC for the Eviction Diversion and Defense Partnership, EDDP for short, is right here. So when you ask TRC what the EDDP is, they'll tell you that it really works to help provide support in five key areas. Those areas are housing support, housing counseling, court navigation, mediation services, and then direct financial rental assistance. So a lot of these are just expansions of services that the Tenant Resource Center already offers. So for instance, housing support and housing counseling, mediation, limited court navigation, those are things that they have historically operated and do still operate as well through, again, financial support from the city through our tenant services contract that we have with them. But understanding the need of the pandemic, really ramping it up, better coordinating those systems, and then being able to provide direct financial support as well for folks who are in eviction court. The last component of this, and this is a huge one as well, is being able to refer eligible tenants who are in eviction court with partner attorneys. So those partner attorneys can provide legal representation at no cost to eligible tenant households. The way this worked is, so this map here is all of the evictions in Dane County, sort of zoomed into the city of Madison, that occurred from April 2023 to April 2024, just to use it as an example. So when a tenant has an eviction filed against them with Dane County courts, what TRC does is they have staff who go through those lists and they send what they call court mailers directly to households. And it says, you might not know this. Your landlord has filed for an eviction against you. Sometimes landlords don't always follow posting guidelines that are required by state. Different things that tenants might not be aware. But it says you have an eviction court date filed. Here's information on it. Here's how to access it. If you have questions, contact us. And here are resources that are available. One of the resources available being EDDP services and potential rental assistance. So they have tenants call in and they do an intake screening and they utilize a vulnerability index where they can identify which households are going to be most vulnerable and then match up those households who are most vulnerable with legal representation through their partner attorneys. So those community partner attorneys are Legal Action of Wisconsin, the UW Eviction Defense Clinic, and then Community Justice Inc. And I should say too, Tenant Resource Center works directly with these legal partners for folks who do have legal representation. So when you look at Tenant Resource Center's reports, they've been doing great reporting on their EDDP page about some of the outcomes through this. They'll say things like 86% of evictions were dismissed due to EDDP services. A good portion of those are evictions that are for non-payment of rent, because Tenant Resource Center has access to rental assistance and they can say, we'll pay this rent. You can't evict someone for non-payment of rent when there's a rental payment right here. So a lot of those are dismissed. A smaller portion, 30 to 40%, depending on the month, are folks who have representation, and their attorneys negotiate to have a more positive outcome from the tenant. So the Tenant Resource Center works with those attorneys to find solutions that are more appropriate and mutually beneficial to both the tenants and the landlords. So just some results from that program and what we've seen. So for the city of Madison only through EDDP, they've served 1,932 households since the program's inception and dispersed about $14.5 million in direct financial assistance. Again, the largest portion of that being in rental assistance, smaller amount of utility assistance, and average months assisted per household about 7.5. Again, these are folks who are in eviction court, a little bit more vulnerable, and just needing access to some of that increased financial resources to help remain stable within their housing. Just a few more outcomes. This is for both the city and the county, looking through December 1st of 2024. TRC completed almost 2,400 intakes for households who were in eviction court. Again, running through that vulnerability index, seeing folks who are highest risk and being able to partner them. They've provided up to almost 300 households with diversion services, folks who come in who are at risk of eviction and need some legal help to try and stave off that eviction prevention. They provided 307 households with limited legal services. These are folks who don't need full representation, but do want to sit down with an attorney, go over their case, go over documents, and then get some legal advice. And then finally, they've provided full legal representation for over 1,100 households in the community. So in total, that's led to over 2,000 eviction cases being dismissed as of December 1st of last year. Almost 800 stipulated dismissals. Those, again, those negotiations between attorneys or tenants and landlords to try and find a mutually beneficial solution that can help those households stay more stable in housing, even if it's just giving them an extra 2 or 3 months before they need to move out. And then only 283 judgments for landlords over this time. Like I said before, there's generally a power imbalance within the court system where most landlords do have legal representation. Historically, tenants don't. So it helps provide outcomes for tenants that are just a little bit more balanced when you do have matching legal representation. So in total, that's 10.5% of all cases that have been dismissed at or before that first hearing. So that's the program. Again, this program largely and almost entirely funded with emergency rental assistance dollars. So what that means is, while the first ERA-1 is already done and gone, last day could spend funds was December 29th, 2022. ERA-2 does have a sunset date. Last day funds can be spent of September 30th of 2025. So that means we've been meeting together as partners and starting to talk about what it looks like to close down this program and what our plan is going to be as we move towards that date of September 30th. So moving towards closure, we have met with partners, city, county, TRC, other folks who are involved within it to talk about what this might look like. And we've developed a communications timeline just so we can let folks know what's coming. And then also just a program processing timeline, just so we can ensure that, once the program is done, we have to report directly back to U.S. Department of Treasury for a full accounting of where all of these funds went. So that by that September 30th date, closely after that, needing to turn around and provide documentation of what assistance we were providing, who it went to, in addition to the quarterly reporting that we've been doing. So as far as the closure timeline, that's really starting now. So this month, mass communications are going to go out to program participants. You might have seen an article in the Cap Times 2 days ago that was on housing instability, was mentioned that federal funds end later this year in 2025. This is one of those cases. So sometime this month, we are going to start sending out communication to program participants, both TRC as well as the city and county. We're currently working on a joint news releases with the county to try and make sure that folks are aware of this. That's going to be coming out this month as well. And then moving into social media posting beginning in February. So TRC is going to be doing their own social media posting. We're working with our public information officer to try and get information out through social media. The county is going to be doing that as well. The other unique aspect of this is there are so many different stakeholders within this. So Tenant Resource Center is going to be holding town halls or information sessions that are targeted to different stakeholders. So they're going to be targeted to tenants. Folks can come in, get information about it, hear about it, targeted to landlords, targeted to attorneys, both attorneys who work with tenants as well as attorneys who generally represent landlords because they've become so used to how this system has been working within the courts over the past few years. And then our community partners as well. When I say community partners, I mean general community organizations for 4 years, 5 years now, folks who are out providing services in the community, talking to folks, working with families, have become used to saying, they hear we're struggling with rent, we don't know what to do. Go to Dane Court, Court 2.0, go to the Tenant Resource Center, go to Community Action Coalition. And so that's going to be a large change within the system to try and figure out where folks can be directed to. TRC is also going to start those communications with the Dane County Court System in February. And then in April, they're going to start mini resource fairs. So folks who are clients in the EDDP right now, we'll be able to go into TRC, meet with different community organizations, talk about what they might be able to offer. Rent is expensive, childcare is expensive, food is expensive, and see what other resources are out there that can help reallocate some household money, household funds to maybe help support rent payments where it was a little bit more of a struggle before. And then finally, modified court mailers are going to be going out in April from TRC as well. Again, those court mailers being, like I said before, when an eviction is filed, TRC will send out a mailer, access to resources. Those are going to have to be changed to reflect the new ecosystem of what's going on. And so finally, with the program processing timeline, because we're looking at a September 30th sunset date when funds can no longer be used, that means it's really going to be summer when the last funding is going to be available, just to make sure we can have everything in order again to report back to the federal government and get all of those numbers in line to ensure that we, to tell them and let them know that we have been doing what we were intended to do with the funds. So last arrears payments for this program, that's money that's past due on rent, is going to be covering the month of June, most likely at this point. And those checks will go out probably the end of June. And the last prospective rent payments will be for the month of August. Those are tenants who are extremely low income, highly vulnerable. TRC has the ability to sometimes pay a month of future rent instead of waiting until rent is past due, do that. Or in the case of like a stipulated dismissal, assist folks in finding new housing and assist with, you know, a first month's rent and security deposit. So really the last time that checks will likely at this point, we think, go out is really going to be end of June, early August for the program. I know that was a lot. I will stop there and leave it open if anyone has questions.
All right, questions abound. We'll start with Alderdean and Nina.
Thank you. I'm curious about a couple of things. Can we, when will we foreseeably be able to get information on how many people are still vulnerable as we approach the end of this program? And what are we doing for eviction diversion going forward? Or is that something that's in the conversation as we go to finish this program?
Those are good questions. So we are in regular touch with TRC. And so as we approach the date, we'll have a better idea of how many households are still actively vulnerable or most vulnerable really within their caseload. And they're going to maintain contact with those households as well. I think for folks who are vulnerable, the first stop often is the tenant resource center. That's generally where folks get referred to. So being already in touch with them, you know, they have the ability to help provide counseling or maybe referral to other resources. Building partnerships through the resource fairs that they're going to hold there is hopefully going to help put more folks in touch as well. But I don't have an exact number of folks right now that we expect will still be facing and coming up to that date. Evictions have increased this year over last year, so we'll see what happens moving forward. But I think in a couple of more months we'll have a better idea of it. As far as what we're doing for planning moving forward, I think that's a larger community conversation. We've had a lot of conversations with it within our partners, and I think a lot of the focus, you're right, is moving to diversion and prevention. Like I said in the TRC slide of what EDDP is. A lot of those services are services that they already provide and have provided through their general tenant services contract and other funding that they get. They did, HUD just announced, want to say 2 or 3 days ago, that Tenant Resource Center was a recipient of an eviction prevention grant through the Department of Housing and Urban Development as well. So that's going to provide almost $1 million of TRC to TRC to continue to provide some of those services. Not at a level that they're at right now is funded through emergency rental assistance, but they will still be able to provide at least legal assistance, mediation, in some capacity to the folks who are most vulnerable in the community. So they'll still be doing some of those intakes, still be talking to folks, and then still be able in a limited capacity to refer folks out. Legal services is also a smaller component of our tenant services contract with them, in amount that funds probably one attorney to provide eviction defense services. So that additional funding will help bridge that gap a little bit more as well. But I would expect that there is going to be a larger conversation to shift to that diversion.
Thank you. Do you think that, because I know that eviction diversion and prevention is one of the biggest tools we have to, you know, because it's so much easier to keep people housed than it is to rehouse. Is that something that we need to talk about in a wider aspect that might be? Do you think it would be beneficial to have that conversation a little bit wider? I guess is the question.
Can you provide clarification on what you mean by wider?
I don't know. I mean, like a big, mostly I'm just wondering, like, I feel like we need to kind of get on it a little bit more certainly than I think we have in the past. And I'm just wondering if, like, where we can go to kind of have a bigger conversation about it and get more people involved to help.
So I think TRC is starting to organize some of those conversations themselves. So one of the things I would shout out and say is if you, I don't know the website off the top of my head, but you can Google Tenant Resource Center EDDP reports, and they have a wealth of information and data on what they've learned through administering this program. And they're starting to talk to other organizations. Certainly their legal partners have had other meetings about what that diversion and prevention might look like. So I think those conversations are largely being read within folks who are providing those services at the moment. We keep plugged in on those. One of the great things I would say about the HUD grant that TRC was just notified that they'd receive as well is they're actually getting funding as part of that, specifically for data and reporting to continue to help build out what a diversion and prevention future looks like based on the experience that they're continuing to get through this program. And then once it switches over to that, once we have a closure, what diversion and prevention looks like most effectively here without rental assistance funded by the federal government, but what it looks like really just with counseling, mediation, and potential legal services as well. So it's a evolving conversation and one that I know they're putting a lot of work into that we're keeping aware of as well.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Alder. Alder, you get her.
Yes, and for this question, I'm not sure it's possible for you to answer any more completely than you have to, Alder Dinamia. But have we, in looking at this process, developed an estimate for what the potential impact is over the year after the final termination of the program? As to what we might see in terms of increased homelessness and, single parties, families, and so forth, so that we could do some kind of planning for what we have to do with homeless capacity, even if it's an interim. And as Alder Dean and Nina said, the rehousing is such a difficult process. And if we can't keep the folks with rental assistance, utility assistance in their housing, there's a high probability that there'll be an extra demand on our homeless resources. So if we haven't done that yet, maybe it might be beneficial for us to try to generate some kind of estimate.
Noted and point well taken. I mean, those are starts of conversations we're having now. Evictions can be so variable month to month. And honestly, after having this program in place for the last handful of years, I think it's still a question that's sort of up in the air and that we're trying to figure out exactly what evictions look like from a landlord perspective and a court perspective moving forward over the next couple of months and couple and year. But yeah, those conversations haven't started and they'll certainly continue. I don't think we've gotten to a point, or at least I haven't been aware of a point where we're talking specifically about estimates, but I'm sure one will come shortly.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Alder. Angie?
Yeah, thanks. Some of the questions that I was going to ask was asked by the other two committee members. So thank you for taking those off my list. I did want to ask Matt, just for clarification, back to the one PowerPoint slide that you had that had all of the dots about evictions across Dane County. Was that map actually of eviction filings versus actual evictions? Because from what I understand from the Wisconsin eviction project is that we are not yet back to the eviction rates that we were at
prior to COVID hitting. And so it seemed that there were quite a few on that dot and on that your dot matrix. And so I wondered if those were actually filings and not actual evictions. So could you clarify that for me? That was one question. And then the other one was around the funding, and you're estimating that that probably will run out around July is when you will end and not have more dollars available. How is that kind of track to know that that is around that time when you feel like you will be able to, that you'll be running out of funds? I mean, is it possible that you'll get to that time and there might be a couple of more families yet that you'll be able to help? Can you kind of explain how you're tracking that? And then I'm sorry, one last one around the data that the others were also asking. I know HUD is giving them funding it, and part of that funding is to be able to collect some of the data. And I know some of the data that we have been kind of wanting to have, but there's really no formal system to be able to track that. And I think it's another piece of negotiation that I'm hoping is also part of the conversation that TRC and the attorneys are having is around non-renewals. And so I'm wondering if there is that possibility with this HUD funding that has data tracking as part of the system and part of that funding, if non-renewals could, we could have a formal system for non-renewals. And I'm sorry I threw so much at you at once.
You might need to break it down, Matt.
I think I've got it for now.
Okay.
One, that's a really good point. When I was talking about the eviction map, I was talking about the court mailers they send out in response to filings.
Okay.
That is a map of filings in Dane County.
Thank you.
So that is a really important clarification. Second, we have been working with TRC to project essentially their spend down rate based on how many clients they're currently serving and what estimates are really of evictions within the coming months based on historical trends, eviction filings, now
Okay.
that I've got
Yeah.
that, based on historical trends. So that's what we're projecting. There's the potential that things might be able to be extended a little bit, but we don't know exactly what that process will look like really until we get closer to that date, if it's even a possibility.
Okay.
At some point, we will know a firmer date of when those checks will go out. Right, like I said, they were mostly estimates based on what we assume now based on their spending to support community. But that date will likely shift a little bit. But at some point, there does have to be like a sort of hard cutoff, right? We don't want to return funds to the federal government that can be used to support families. But we don't know when it's going to happen yet.
Okay.
Third question was around non-renewals. There
Yeah.
is no way to track non-renewals because there's not a filing system for them anywhere. So that's a conversation we've had a lot around diversion and prevention with TRC and other community organizations at large, right? That's a large issue that we hear about all the time, anecdotally within our community. But it's not as simple because there's no thing that has to be
Yeah.
filed with a non-renewal to trigger it, right? So
Except
unfortunately,
for there's so many people in the community that are working with families and with individuals that there is a lot that we could capture if we had a system to be able to capture kind of the word of mouth that all of these people are hearing. Like I could tell you, if you ask me, what are my agencies saying, like our non-renewals for their clients, we're trying to keep track of that information. And so I'm just wondering if, and maybe this is, too big of a dream at this point in time for 2025, but I'll just put it out there. Is there the possibility that we will ever have something to be able to also track those non-renewals? Because I think that also results in a lot of families and individuals going back into homelessness, but we're not able to really get a handle on it because we're not able to track that information. And so it's like a chicken and an egg thing, and we just need to be able to figure out a solution, a better solution for it to get that data.
I would be happy to talk to the Tenant Resource Center about exactly what they submitted to HUD for the scope of this grant. We did not co-submit with them. This was a direct grant from them, from HUD to them. I can talk to them just to see what the scope was. Otherwise, I can certainly keep that conversation in mind as we talk to other community partners about potentially what we can do to get a better idea moving forward. Unlike eviction filings, we're never going to have a full picture. but just to have some idea of the scope, I can certainly keep that in mind.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Angie. Thanks, Matt. Other questions for Matt? No one see any. This is not an action item. It's just for information. And it sounds like, Matt, you'll keep us apprised as the year goes on, how things are going and how desperate it starts looking for these folks that have been relying on these funds. Okay, with that happy news, we will turn towards item number six, telling our story, 50th anniversary. Who's taking that? Jim?
Me, unfortunately, or fortunately. I'm sure Jim would love to talk about it too. Hi. Thank you all for being here. And all the work that you do. And that's part of the conversation here with this item, really. As you can imagine in the conversations we've had today, in the midst of all the hard and important work that we want to respond to and we want to act on, we do have to take a little moment to also look at what we've done, right? And celebrate and see that we are being, that we're part of something really positive and that we're making change and looking forward, reconnect and fill our cup. To continue doing that great work that needs to be done. So with this item, I just want to set up some context. So the city of Madison has the Racial Equity and Social Justice Initiative, RESG, RESJ, some people call it. And part of that, your department or division has an equity team that looks at internal or external items that with an equity lens that could be, you know, shifted, whether that's programs and services or procedures or the environment when it looks at staff or outside at customers, clients, the public. This community development division has an equity team. And one of the initiatives that we took on this year is called Telling Our Story. So this work group really emerged as part of many conversations that were internal, and really resurface after budget conversations in the last cycle, where unlike garbage collection and other visible services, the work that we do and the scope of it that we do within the community development division isn't as apparent to the public or everyday Madisonian. As you could see through our agenda today, it's vast what we do and you know it intimately. But really communicating that with the public and telling the story about what we do as a division and also what our partners do, because we couldn't do it without them and other city staff to provide services that directly support our most vulnerable residents and the broader community was and has been very important. So the Telling Our Story initiative really aims to bridge this gap by improving how we communicate the value and the scope of the work that we do. So this could be something as simple as developing a brochure when we're connecting with folks at outreach events about what we do and how they can access our services and programs that are available to them. And then expanding our presence through social media campaigns and really telling the story of the work and the impact of it. And the beauty of this initiative is that it actually aligns with a very, very exciting milestone. So this year marks the 50th anniversary of the city receiving community development block grant funding. So that's super, super exciting. And it also weirdly, like when we started telling the rest of the division about it, it also aligns with the 50th year for the child care tuition assistance and accreditation unit and the services that they've been providing, and also of the community resources or services back then unit and everything that they've been doing. So it's like a big celebration of all the work and the impact that we, you, staff, and our community partners have been at and working hard towards that. So we really want to make sure that we're honoring the past, embracing the present, and really looking forward to the future. And in order to commemorate that, we're hoping to really hold a celebration in April, where there are other things going on too, to really put a word out of how big this is. If you really start thinking about it, you're like, wow, so many things started 50 years ago, right? Like what was happening 50 years ago that we're in this place now? And how are we continuing that work? So it's exciting. It's a moment to celebrate and that we just wanted to put that on your radar. to be proud of and to continue the good work and to be on the lookout for what we have coming in April to keep telling people to keep funding us and pushing for that. Yeah, but that's awesome. It. That's it.
Thanks, Maria. That enthusiasm is contagious. Any questions for Maria? I assume once, you know, as plans develop, we'll get like a save the date for the party. Angie.
I don't necessarily have a question at all, but I just want to say that, you know, I've had the great pleasure of being able to work with a lot of several different City of Medicine staff, and they all are amazing. So I'm really happy about the 50th anniversary, and anything that we can do, you know, we're happy to be able to do this. And I'm excited about that celebration for you all. That's really amazing. And the ResJ tool that you all developed is absolutely phenomenal. That should be replicated across the United States. So I'm just putting a plug in for that. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks, Angie. We need like, you know, applause and confetti and that sort of thing. Any other questions or comments for Maria? Seeing none, we will keep April on the books. Nobody plan a vacation because we have a party to have. Next up is our work plan, year at a glance. Who would like to talk to us about all the work we have in front of us?
That'll be me.
Thanks, John.
Yeah. So, yeah, no vacations in February, too. So just as a reminder, our February meeting will be in person because we have a public hearing as part of our consolidated plan. So just a reminder on that. I won't go through every month, but as you can see on the... On the work plan, we have a lot going on this year, and as we proceed through the year, it will fill up with other items. But I just want to note two things, the RFPs that we have. So we have four RFPs that you'll see this year. We have our home ownership RFP in February that'll be coming, our homeless and housing stability RFP in April. We do provide CDBG funds for a small business loan program with our partners in the Economic Development Division. So you'll see that RFP. And then we have our annual Affordable Housing Fund in July. So exciting stuff that's going on. And then the other thing that you might notice is we have in a couple spots, we have some larger discussions. And so we've heard that you all would like to learn more and have a greater discussion on housing policy and different issues. And so we've identified several opportunities to bring in guest speakers and to talk about some of those things like the Dane County Regional Housing Strategy, potential changes at the federal level with the new administration and some things that are happening at the city. So we're, as we go through, we'll firm those dates up and get those speakers aligned. But just so you know, we've got a lot for you this year. So I think I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Thanks, John. Any questions on the schedule? As he said, February 6th, we're in person. Those are the most fun. So be there, please. Angie.
Sorry. Just wanted to say that right now on the calendar, the meeting for February 6th does say virtual meeting. So just note that that needs to should probably get changed. And then in looking through that calendar, it does look like February right now is the only in-person meeting. Is that intentional? I thought we were trying to do two, but I could be wrong.
You know, I'm remembering that we were trying to do two. We will find out. We'll talk internally about what month we should do that. But
one of the things we had mentioned, Matt and I sat down with John and Maria and Lynette, is maybe for the affordable housing, the tax credit presentations. Sometimes those are more engaging when we do those in person. So that might be an opportunity as well. Matt, you were gonna.
I think we talked about that as an option, and obviously we discuss it amongst the committee and decide, but I think we also talked about perhaps if we have any type of guest speaker on any and you know these larger housing topics that might be more engaging in person as well. So I think those are the two areas we sort of thought might be good for in person.
Thanks for that, Matt. Ben is
Hey,
going to tell us
Angie.
why we cannot do it.
I was just going to mention that there were a couple updates to the year at a glance. And so the most recent version is updated January 9th. It was updated a few hours before the meeting. And that does say that the February meeting is in person. So you might be looking at an older version of the draft,
Not
of
the
the agenda.
document, but the actual calendar invite that went like is on our calendars.
Oh, I will be updating that very shortly
Okay.
to answer
Okay.
that question. Yes.
Thanks,
Thank you.
Ben. Matt, do you still have your hand up? No. Okay. Great. Any other questions? Seeing none. Well, Jim told me there's no staff report, but it is on the agenda. Jim?
Hey, hi everybody, and happy New Year. Yeah, so since the last time we met, month of December, things have been pretty quiet here, so nothing to report out. But just wanted to use the opportunity to applaud Maria and John and boost tonight from Matt and always Ben. We're in very this committee's in very capable hands. Lynette was hovering for a few minutes. Don't know if you noticed that she was chased away.
Saw her
So.
on there.
We'll get by, but I don't have anything. There's been very little that's happened since we last met.
Great. Then we will see everyone hopefully in February in real life. And then I take is that your motion to adjourn, Matt? Yes, it is. Who would like to second? Alder Dean and Nina, we stand adjourned. Thank you all. Thanks, staff. Really great meeting.
Thank you
Have a
all.
good night.